Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
11 o'clock hour, Chase Willie and D. Mace here with you, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, talking Big Machine Music City Grand Prix. It is coming to our city in about a week. It's hard to believe that it is almost here for year two, August 5th through the 7th. You can go to musiccitygp.com to get your tickets and our weekly driver interviews for the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix. It's presented by the Nashville Sheriff and Social Furniture in West Nashville. Shop their summer blowout sale now till July 31st, 60 months with no interest and same day delivery. I am very excited about this, to say hello to the 7-time NASCAR Cup Series champion, now with IndyCar, going to be at the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix. We welcome Jimmy Johnson to the show. Jimmy, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing fantastic. So you were in this race last year. You were running all the road courses and street courses. What were some things that you learned about the streets of Nashville that you can apply to this year?
It was new for everyone, which kind of put me more on equal ground with these veterans of the IndyCar series. The street courses, with them being a temporary circuit, there's really no way to prepare until you show up on the race weekend and drive on it. And then also the track evolves so much as the cars run, the tires that we have on these cars lay down rubber, and the track picks up in grip, and then you can really be more aggressive as the weekend progresses on. And I learned how tricky the Nashville streets are. It's a really rough course, which I think is a good thing. There are a lot of bumps, a lot of characters, we like to call it, and it really makes the cars mishandle. And it makes us work harder as drivers. We make mistakes. We have passes. We have crashes. We have all those things. And I think the race last year was probably one of the most exciting street races in recent memory, honestly, with the numerous cautions. The winner, Marcus Ericsson, went airborne, and I don't know how his car survived the impact of landing back down on the ground and kept going. So it was a perfect race for Nashville, and I'm really excited to come back this year.
You spent, a majority of your career in stock cars, which are big and heavy, and they can take a beating. Now you've moved into IndyCar for the last 2 years, and you were talking about the bumps and how any little thing can set something off. How have you adapted to just how sensitive these IndyCars can be?
Yeah, I'm still on that journey. I mean, I feel like on the ovals, there are much more, common driving styles and sensations that exist between NASCAR and IndyCar. On the street and road courses, the IndyCar is just at such a higher performing level than a cup car that I'm just trying to train my eyes, my senses to the speed and sensations of these cars, and they're really violent. There's not much suspension travel. They create a lot of downforce and ride really low to the ground, so they're constantly slamming the ground. So just everything about it has been new for me, and honestly, it's been a lot of fun. These cars do perform at such a high level that I'm often just giggling in the car because I can't believe how fast I've gone through a turn or how quickly the car stops on the brakes.
We're talking to a great champion, Jimmy Johnson. He's coming to Nashville for the Grand Prix here just in a few weeks. Jimmy, I want to take you down memory lane. This is our second year with the Grand Prix downtown, but, we've had a great resurgence here with all of our tracks, with the fairgrounds and the super speedways back. The very first year of the Super Speedway, I got a chance to interview. I did not know a whole lot about racing at the time, but our good friend Norm Parton was putting together some interviews. We were trying to hype up the new venue. You were just an up-and-comer at the time. You sat down at the table with us, and Norm was telling me, he goes, this is a guy you want to know. You need to know who this guy is. Because you were in that first race at the Nashville Super Speedway. Just think about how much has gone by. That was, I think, 2001. But, man, have you had a great arc since then?
You've done some things.
You've done a few things since then.
Yeah. It's crazy how time flies. And I've always loved racing in Nashville. And I first raced at the fairgrounds in, I think, probably 1998 or 99 in the ASA series that was competing there. And I was new to the asphalt and stock cars in general. And I just couldn't believe how fast we'd rip around the fairgrounds there. fell in love with the track, and I'm so happy to see that the track is still active and going. So happy to see that the Super Speedway is back on the NASCAR calendar and it's so successful. And then obviously the IndyCar racing going on in the streets.
Jimmy Johnson is with us. So speaking of your IndyCar campaign, you're running the ovals this year. You got to run Indianapolis that you were so successful at in the NASCAR Cup Series. But a fifth place, your career best finish at Iowa on Sunday, that beat your sixth place finish, I believe you had at Texas. So as you continue this journey like you're talking about, how much does that do for your confidence of being able to run top 10, top 5 in these cars?
Yeah, I mean, on a funny note, it turns out that I'm pretty good on ovals. You know, these street and road courses are a little different. And when I look at my Cup career, I had 83 Cup wins, and only one of those 83 wins was on a road course. So last year in just running the road races, I knew it wasn't in my sweet spot, but I just had to get to a place of comfort with the safety of the cars. And I did that last year, and then I've obviously been in the full the season full-time this year and enjoying it. And, you know, I am getting more comfortable. The way you make lap time on the road courses is in a different area than the way I grew up racing. Everything is made up in an Indy car on the brakes. And in a Cup car, they're big, heavy cars. Sure, the braking matters, but you're going to melt the brakes off the car if you drive it that aggressively and that hard lap after lap, where the Indy car is quite the opposite. So I'm working through that, and I feel like I'm making good gains every time I'm in the car. But, you know, I truly feel like Indy car racing is the most competitive form of road racing on the planet, more so than Formula One. You know, we have basically a spec car. Half the field is former Formula One drivers. Then you have all the domestic talent that's in the series. You know, it's just so competitive. But I'm making gains. I'm enjoying it. And again, the intensity of driving these cars just makes me smile. I mean, you drive them with such anger and they stick. And it's just a wild, wild experience.
When was the last time you were in a stock car for anything? Was it your last race?
Yeah, November 8th of 2020 was my last time in a stock car.
How much do you, even though listening to you, you're having so much fun in IndyCar, how much do you miss the NASCAR circuit? Because you were there for so many years and made so many connections. Obviously, spent your entire career with Rick Hendrick, and you see what they're continuing to do, and Jeff moving into his new role. But how much do you miss your time in the Cup Series?
Yeah, I miss I miss the people probably more than anything. I do feel like I was ready for a change of pace. The grind of the NASCAR schedule is quite intense. And I felt very fulfilled with what I accomplished there. And the hardest part was really walking away from the people, and especially someone like Mr. Hendrick, all the people at Hendrick Motorsports. I have so many friends through the garage area within NASCAR. You know, that's the part that stings still today. And I've been so busy with IndyCar, I haven't even been to a NASCAR race since I stepped away. So I really do miss everyone, and the people make it all what it is. And hopefully someday soon I'll slow down and be able to go back and experience and enjoy those moments, those people.
Well, I have to ask the question, Jimmy, but because people have been wondering with the next gen car, you know, a lot of drivers that, you know, may have been thinking, okay, it's time to hang it up. Kurt Busch has said this a few times that he wanted to drive the next gen car. Is that something when you accomplish your IndyCar goals that you might be interested in of going back, even if it's a one-off, a Daytona 500, something like that, just so you can get inside this new car?
You know, I feel like from a car driving experience, I'm not as drawn to the new car. I think it's been very competitive, puts on a great show. But what I've been driving from just a car driving experience, you know, these Indy cars are rocket ships. So from that piece, you know, I'm very satisfied. But to go back, 2020 was a weird year with COVID. I feel like there was kind of some unfinished moments to share with my fans, to even experience on my own. Three quarters of the season, we didn't even have fans in the stands my final year. So, you know, there is a void there that I'm missing. And if I was to go back, I think it would be more in that space than it would be just driving the car.
Well, very, very cool. Coming up this weekend, you're back at Indy for the Grand Prix. It is a NASCAR weekend as well, as the Cup Series will be there on Sunday, Xfinity on Saturday, with you guys going back to a place that you're familiar with the road course. What do you think of your chances this weekend?
Yeah, I feel like I can probably run a top 15. I think that's a realistic goal for me on a road course where I am right now on my journey. I was able to finish 16th at Mid-Ohio a few weeks ago. So hopefully I can build on that and finish a little higher.
Well, Jimmy, we appreciate the time today. We'll see you here in Nashville coming up August 5th through the 7th. It's almost here, but best of luck. Great talking to you, and we'll do it again soon.
You as well. Appreciate it.
Jimmy Johnson, 7-time NASCAR Cup Series champion, now drives the 48 American Legion Carvana Honda for Chip Ganassi Racing in the NTT IndyCar Series. The Big Machine Music City Grand Prix, August 5th through the 7th, on the streets of Nashville. Get your tickets at musiccitygp.com. You can hear that race right here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. And our driver interviews are presented by the Nashville Sheriff and Social Furniture in West Nashville. Shop their summer blowout sale now till July 31st. 60 months with no interest and same-day delivery. We'll have Mike Vrabel coming up at the bottom of the hour for his press conference. But coming up next, Teresa Walker said something interesting on Robbie and Rex Road this morning, and I want to get Willie and D-Mace's thoughts and give mine as well. Are the Titans better on offense this year? We'll discuss that. Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Back here, Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Also on the Game Nashville app, Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason. With you, our new midday show, weekdays 10 to 2, if you did miss the start of the show. We're very, very excited to have Derek Mason back with us full-time. But unfortunately with that means Darren is no longer a part of our team here at 102.5 The Game. And very tough, but we know that, D-Mac is a huge part of the station's history. He was the first voice that you heard when we came on the air 11 years ago, and we wish him nothing but the best, and I know our friendship will continue with him as well, but some of you have been asking, and this is the unfortunate business side of things and how it all works sometimes. Willie, you've lived it a lot in your career, but like I said, we love Darren and wish him nothing but the best.
Yes, I think you've said it really well. We shared a lot of thoughts in our first hour, but yeah, we all want to wish him well as we go in this new direction here, but it is tough. It has all been really hard for us to go through this, but as we move forward here, we'll do the best we can and be as supportive as we can from where we sit, which is not easy.
No doubt about it. So earlier today, Teresa Walker of the AP spent the entire 8 o'clock hour in studio with Robbie and Rex Road. And I thought, really good stuff. I had a training camp. Teresa's covered this team since the beginning. But she said something interesting that kind of stood out to me, got my attention, and that is basically that she felt that the Titans offense this year with the pieces that they have are better than they were last year. Now, I think there's a lot of potential, but – Derek, as you know, potential gets coaches and GMs fired all the time. I think there is a lot of potential. Now, I don't think right now today they're better. Mm-hmm. I think they're deeper. I think there could be more opportunity to be better. But I respectfully disagree with Teresa. I don't think this team is better offensively around Ryan Tannehill today as they report for training camp.
No, and you know, Teresa has been doing this for a very long time. She's covered the Tennessee Titans for a very long time. So, you know, you take what she says and it's like, man, she knows what she's talking about. And even though in this situation, she's just giving her opinion and you respect that. But because there's always comes a but when you say things like that. I can't see how this roster or this depth chart or whatever you want to call it, it's better. Let's just say the top 11 guys or
you're saying compared
guys,
to last year.
Compared to last year at this time. There's no way this roster, as we look at it now, if you're talking about the start 11, is better than it was last year at the beginning of the season. I'm not saying at the beginning of the training camp. I'm not saying as we progress into the season. Yes, we understand that Julio wasn't the Julio that the Titans thought they were getting. AJ was in and out of the lineup. You know, Derrick Henry missed a bulk of the season. You know, they had their problems with the tight end position. So ultimately, yes, that roster was flawed. But at the beginning of the season, AJ was coming off a heck of a season. Derrick Henry was coming off a 2,000-yard season. Ryan Tannehill was coming off a season that, you know,
was his best season
exactly
by far.
His best season as a Titan. The offensive line was pretty much solidified with the exception of Taylor Lewan because people didn't know how he would play after the injury. On the outside, you know, obviously Julio and AJ, then they felt they had a tight end, you know, at the beginning of the season, you know, enough, so much so that they allowed Jonnu Smith to go sign somewhere else. You know, so in their mind and in everybody else's mind, the offense wasn't the problem. We were looking at the defense, right?
Yeah.
100%.
Exactly. So I don't understand how you would think that at this particular moment, like last year at the beginning of the training camp and this year at the beginning of the training camp, that this year's roster is better. It's not better. It probably will be better.
I think it's incomplete.
As we get into the season, but you can't say this year's roster is better than last year's roster if you're talking to top 11 guys.
All right, now I got to hear how the question was phrased to Teresa, because if it is they're going to be better than they were last year on offense, for all the reasons you said, Derek, it was a train wreck. It took time for Taylor Lewan to get back up to speed. Derrick Henry got hurt in the middle of the season. They never got A.J. Brown and Julio Jones going at the same time. So I agree with you. As we sat here on this date last year, it looked like it was going to be a top five offense.
Exactly.
But it never materialized. So the fact is, this offense last year was 20th. In Football Outsiders' overall efficiency rating, they were below average. They were 20th in the league. If I'm reading this right, 20th in the league. Yeah. So all this team this year has to do is be above 20th.
Just 19.
Just be average, and you will be better by definition. So I can see where Teresa's going with that. Yeah. If that's the question, I think potentially this team can be better than last year. They can
potentially
outperform.
Yes.
Oh, but I think there's no question that they could, that's a low bar. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a below average offense that won 12 games.
Yeah. Okay. So every year when you go into a season, every team has a bunch of ifs.
Absolutely.
If this happens or if this doesn't happen, I feel like for the offense this year, there are a lot more ifs.
Or question marks.
Or questions. Starting with the offensive line as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Who's going to be the left guard? Is it going to be Brewer or Jamarco Jones?
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody else? Who's going to be the right tackle? Dylan Raidens? Somebody else?
Did we have those questions last year?
Last year, the only question on the offensive line, you had a right tackle.
Yeah,
it was Quisenberry. So they had one hole to fill and not,
they
and
cut
not two.
Dennis Kelly.
So that's a difference, right? That's a question. You got to come up with two guys there, and it's not like an obvious.
Including,
they didn't spend a lot of money on a free agent or something like that.
And you're replacing a pro bowler, you know, at left
Roger Saffold. Yeah, that's a big question.
So that's a big question mark right there. Treylon Burks, rookie wide receiver that did not have a good offseason. Now, supposedly, you know, I've seen some stuff on Twitter. He's shown up in shape, looking like he's made a lot of progress. We'll see when they hit the field. He couldn't complete a practice during minicamp. That's a big question and a big concern. Robert Woods, who you traded for. Hey, love the trade, but he's coming off a torn ACL.
Exactly.
How effective is he going to be? And, oh, by the way, who you got behind them? Nick Westbrook-Ikhina has shown nice growth as one of your, you know, wide receivers, but not your go-to guy. He's more of like a three or a four somewhere in there, but he's going to be asked to do a lot. Yes, you address the tight end position by signing Austin Hooper, drafting Chig Okonkwo, but you don't know.
Those are still question marks as well.
Yeah, so that's what
major
I'm saying.
Question marks.
That's what I'm saying, that there's a lot of potential with this team if it all comes together. And I haven't even mentioned the big elephant in the room, and that's the big guy behind everybody, you know, how is Derrick, how effective is Derrick Henry really going to be? Mm-hmm.
But can, I think the real essential question is, can this offense be better than average? The bar is a lot lower. Last year we were saying they've got to be top 10 mm-hmm. to pull the defense behind them. Now they've fixed a lot of the stuff on the defense. It's the opposite. We're thinking the defense could be top 10, and the offense just needs to be solid for them to be in the mix and get back into the playoffs. Now they need ultimately to win big. They need to be better than average, way better than average on offense. Yeah. So potential is there. But all I'm saying is it wouldn't take a whole lot for enough of those question marks to come forward for them to end up with a better offense than they had last year. They had so many problems last year mm-hmm. with protecting the quarterback and getting personnel on the field that could make a play.
But we didn't know that until the season got going.
Oh, of course not. Of course not.
So again,
well, how was the question phrased? Well, Your Honor, right. How was the question phrased to Teresa Walker? I want to know.
It depends on how the, question, was phrased, and then ultimately we know how she answered it in a sense. But again, if you were to put both of these rosters at the beginning of training camp, we would say, well, roster A, which is roster last year, was better than this roster.
On paper, question.
Because
that's a good way to phrase the question.
Exactly.
Because would you take, if you lined them up, just you printed out the paper mm-hmm. and you got your memory erased, you don't know what last year.
You just know their name.
You just know their names and what they've done in their career, and you say you got to pick one. Mm-hmm. Would you pick last year's roster or this year's roster?
I pick last year's roster.
Overall or just offense?
Offense. We're just talking offense.
Yeah, just
offense. Because the defense is a big part of that yeah. question, though, if it depends on how you word the question.
Because you had
just offense.
You had AJ, you had Julio, you had your offensive line solidified pretty much. Derrick Henry in the backfield and Ryan Tannehill coming off a season, which was his best season as a Tennessee Titan. There's no way you can't tell me that roster on paper at the beginning of the year was better than this roster. Because, again, we have a lot of still question marks with this roster. Will Treylon Burks be able to, you know, catch up and catch on to the NFL game? Will Robert Woods be healthy enough? Is Nick Westbrook-Ikhine going to step up and become, to me, a two? Not just a three, but a two if he has to. Then the offensive line. So we still have a lot of questions with this offense. Not necessarily with the defense, but with the offense.
And a lot of questions are going to be asked to the head coach and the general manager. Coming up next, you will hear from Mike Vrabel and John Robinson of the Titans as you listen to Chase, Willie, and D-Mace here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We're back here on Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, and we head over to St. Thomas Sports Park here from Mike Vrabel.
You know, there's a lot of introductions. For example, you know Joey will talk on behalf of the equipment staff and the things that we expect, explain the Guardian caps that you guys will see and probably have seen around the league. That was a decision that we all came to agreement on. I think the science and the data is to a point now where that's best for the player, for their health and safety. When you talk about impact, you know, the force and the amount of impact, it can reduce it, you know, up to 20% if two players are wearing that. That's pretty significant. So, you know, everybody will wear those. Can we – this is like – so that's – and that's a change. That technology has changed. It wasn't that significant in the past couple years, but I think with their technology and what they've designed, I think it's become, those are pretty significant numbers.
How would you categorize progress for Treylon Burks? Like this week, upcoming week, like what would you say is progress for him?
I don't know what, you know, I mean, I define that as just making sure that you're doing the little things, that you understand where to go as we continue to add installation. There's a lot of information that we give them, that you can come out and compete. I mean, the biggest thing for training camp is earning the trust of teammates and coaches, not only, you know, developing and trying to improve and on all the things that we're going to need throughout the season, but it's also, you know, about trust and being where you're supposed to be for the quarterback. And, you know, doing those things day in and day out with some consistency.
Big picture from the end of the last two seasons, is there something organizationally you guys have learned or want to strive to do differently that get you closer to where you want to go?
Well, I mean, every year, every day we come to work, we're going to try to figure out ways to win championships, but I don't think we're there necessarily. I don't think I'm going to start at the back and move forward and work backwards. I'm going to start with today, which was a conditioning test, and look fantastic, and they understand, and our players understand how we have to play and the condition in which we have to be in to play that style of football, through the course of a long season. You know, we know that, you know, you have to be at your best in those games. There's no do-overs. There's no makeups or, hey, we get to play them again in 3 weeks. So, you know, that's when you have to be at your best, and all those keys and the game plan and our performances, coaching and playing, have to be at our best.
Mike, you look at that Arizona game last year, and have it affect anything of your plan here in the next few weeks in terms of how active you guys to be, or just did that change anything how that game went?
No, we didn't play very well. You know, we didn't coach very well. I don't, you know, that's... The plan will be different. I mean, there'll be differences in the practice schedule. Just trying to be conscious of, you know, the workload and the third day, and just using the data that we get from our staff and from the, you know, the players association and the NFL doctors and BioCorps and all those things. Just trying to make sure that we're doing right by our players and that we're giving them exactly what they need to feel confident when the season comes.
What's the balance like, I guess, Mike, for some of the older guys, the veterans, and wanting to get them work but don't want to overdo it?
We've talked about this before. Everybody's going to have a plan, and I try to – I mean, I do explain that to the team, you know, where a player like Des Fitzpatrick is compared to, you know, Robert Woods or, you know, Jeff Simmons and Kevin Byard, you know, there's a lot of guys that have played a lot of football for us, and that doesn't mean that they're not going to be working. But I don't know, you know, everybody's plan is going to be different each and every day, and there's a balance to that, to making sure that guys are getting what they need, but also, you know, being conscious of how much they're going to play for us.
How do you feel about the way Treylon attacked his health this summer, and is he in a position to get through camp every day?
Well, I mean, he's put together two good days. I mean, I'm not going to predict – you know, who's going to be out there every day right now. Corey, I can't do that. I won't do that. You know, we're focusing on, you know, just daily improvement with each and every player. And, you know, we're excited to keep working with them. And, but that's going to be the same for everybody. It's just trying to focus on today and how we approach and how we attack today. We'll have a lot of meetings today, and then we'll be out there, you know, bright and early tomorrow.
The cornerback room was already young. You lose Buster. Do you feel like you need to get some at least an experienced voice in there for camp, another experienced voice?
Well, John and I, you know, we haven't had a whole lot of time to discuss, and we'll see who's out there. We'll need to replace the body. You know, those are things that, you know, we've looked at over the course of a couple of years of how many guys you need at each position and working and making sure that, you know, guys are staying you know, that you can get through practice and function, but also somebody that can help contribute. So, you know, nothing I would say is imminent right now as far as replacing him.
What kind of progress are you hoping to see from Malik from the beginning of camp towards the end?
From who?
Malik.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said. We talk about, you know, I mean, just the presence in the huddle, first and foremost, is being able to command the huddle, you know, getting guys lined up, the operation, I think is something that's critical as this installation starts to mount. Can you handle and fix mistakes and see guys where the alignments are and put guys, you know, that's when I know that everybody knows what they're doing, is when a quarterback or safety or linebacker can tell another position, hey, you know, you're supposed to be off or you're supposed to be over here. Those are things that I would look for. Made a lot of correct decisions in the spring, but timing probably wasn't where it needed to be, and therefore accuracy starts to go down. So I try to explain all that as the decision making was really good for a rookie quarterback. But the timing has to improve, and we're hopeful that, you know, when the timing improves, that the accuracy improves as well.
And how will the preseason games be very advantageous for Malik?
Well, you know, that's where you're going to have to, you know, where we stay away from the quarterback. You know, our guys do a great job of practicing against each other, taking care of each other. We work hard, we rush, whatever we're doing. But we're staying away from the quarterback. And until you're out there in this league and taking some hits, which toughness is not a concern. It's just those are going to be important that you're out there and standing in the pocket, stepping up in the pocket, and throwing and passes and finding throwing lanes.
Mike, how do you feel like the plan you created with Jeff Simmons went along during mandatory minicamp, and do you expect him to practice when you guys open up practice tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, I expect Jeff to practice, and, you know, we'll see how he feels and see how, you know, it looks and figure out what's best for him. You know, he'd be one of those guys that, you know, would have a somewhat different plan maybe potentially, but I would imagine everybody that's healthy will be out there ready to go tomorrow.
Woods and Caleb, do you have to ramp them up, or the fact that
they're doing some things? I would say that they're probably participating in 90% of the stuff that we did the first couple days. There's some things that we're holding them out of. But the nice thing is they've been able to, when we're doing those drills, to go over there and find ways to work for a few minutes with each other, which kind of makes it nice. They're both going through the same process and they're mirrored positions. So, you know, for example, during the open field tackle drill, right, we don't want them doing that right now, but they can go over and they can work releases or they'll work something else. And we've asked them to kind of come to us with a plan of things that they would like to. We've given them a couple things and then also, you know, asked them to kind of think of some things that they can do to work with each other during those 5 or 6 minutes.
Derek, although he's 100% apparently, but coming back from injury,
I didn't even hear who you said, Teron, to start.
I said for Derek Henry.
For Derek.
Right, with him, you know, good to go coming back from the injury, do you change, like, your approach or how you work him during camp and in preseason games, or is that something that, you know, is going to be status quo?
No, I mean, there'll be, you know, he'll have some involvement, you know, and then I think that there'll come a time where we'll, you know, do some different things with him. And then, you know, I wouldn't anticipate seeing Derek in the preseason games.
What kind of mentality are you looking for from Dylan? You've talked before about kind of the guys who say they're aggressive but say it in a meek voice and you don't buy it. He hasn't talked in a way that's like, I have to seize the position.
Well, I think that I'm hoping that the momentum from the spring carries over to training camp. Excited to see him work. Fantastic condition. I think his technique's improved. I think he's more comfortable in what we're doing and what we're asking him to do and with his techniques. And so, you know, we'll base it on each day, and he's excited to go earn a position.
You look at those two spots, Mike, as open competitions and then camp left guard and right tackle.
Yeah, I mean, I think until somebody absolutely solidifies that, well, you know, I mean, Jamarco and Brew will work, Dylan and Nick and, you know, all the other tackles that we have. But, you know, we're going to have to line up with five guys tomorrow in the first group and, you know, see what that looks like after the first practice and then give everybody an opportunity to compete.
Do you really expect the offensive line to sort itself out during the group sessions with the Cardinals?
Well, we're going to practice against Tampa first and then the Cardinals. Those are great opportunities for guys. We ask offensive linemen, you know, you have to know the guy you're rushing against, right? What's the skill set? Is this a speed guy? Is this a quick guy? Is this a big guy? And when you go against our guys, they have a plan because they have an idea. They see them every single day. And so, you know, Tampa is going to bring in a new set of guys that are going to be fantastic, that are going to allow our guys something different, and so will Arizona. So those reps are valuable to be able to see a bunch of different skill sets, body types, change from one day to the next. Okay, this first day maybe wasn't very good. How can I adjust and fix and correct some of those things? No different than the receivers, whether it's a big receiver or it's a quicker receiver. You know, I mean, are you talking about Rondell Moore? Are you talking about Evans? you know, from different guys around the league. We do that each and every week. You know, that's what the game plan is, and then you try to practice and, you know, have somebody on the show team, you know, recreate that person.
You talked about being great around Ryan, and you clarified kind of what you meant about that at the combine. But with AJ gone and the personnel shifts that you have, do you feel like the personnel around Ryan is better?
Well, I don't want to rely on talent. I don't want to be a coach that relies on talent. I want to be, I want to coach fundamentals, technique. I want to teach. I want to make sure that they play with great effort, and I know that we're talented. So my job is to not try to rely on talent. I want to try to coach. You know, there's a certain way that we want to play the game, and when we do, you know, we're a good football team. And when we turn it over and we don't protect the guy with the football, whether that's a quarterback, a running back, a receiver, you know, we're not very good. You know, we can't operate like that.
The teams that win big generally have a degree of superstar talent, no?
You know, I don't know if anybody right now, you know, we haven't played any games, so, you know, there's no stats for this year. Every year is a new year, and we're going to expect your best players have to play good in this league to win, if that's what you mean.
Clarify, Mike, I wasn't sure if I heard you correctly. You mentioned about Jeffrey Simmons having a different type of plan than most other guys. Why does he have a different type of plan?
Well, he was just an example. There's going to be numerous guys, you know, whether it's Danico Autry, whether it's Ben Jones, Taylor Lewan. It won't look any different tomorrow, but, you know, in a few days, in a few weeks, you know, maybe it is different. You know, it's not just Jeff. I use that as an example. We have a handful of guys that have played a lot of snaps for us. And just trying to make sure that they're ready for the football. See, I want Jeffrey to play as many snaps in the manner in which he plays them, which is physical and violent and fast as he possibly can. And so I have to try to, with our training staff and our strength staff, try to find out what that best plan for that is.
Lewan swore off social media. How hard do you think it'll be for him to live up to that vow?
He's in there shaking and he's holding his phone. And
Season ahead?
I think we all kind of sometimes get caught up in what's going on out there, much different than when you and I, you know, were in high school or in college. You know, that a lot of social media is fantasy land. It's everybody's best moments, shiny moments, but we all deal with, you know, we all deal with adversity. We all deal with days where we don't quite feel so great. And probably getting off social media wouldn't be a bad thing for all of us.
You bring in the individual plans for certain offensive players. How important is it to make sure that Ryan gets the reps with the receivers?
It, you know, those are things, you know, when do you do this? And what do you maybe take off some individual period and just try to go with the team period? What's the best way to build continuity? The timing that we talked about, the trust, you know, all those things are reasons why you practice. So, you know, hopefully, you know, we can manage it, you know, through certain ways.
Mike, with the challenge of being the number one seed last year, how do you approach coming into this new season, kind of drawing the line, that was then, this is now, when you have so much continuity on staff, on the roster, and overall with this franchise?
I mean, you've been in the NFL for a long time. That doesn't mean anything. You know, that's not going to carry over. 1 week doesn't carry over to the next. You know, if you don't play well in this league, you're going to lose. And if you play good, you have a chance to win. You know, those guys, you know, we all know that. So you know, we've moved on just like everybody else has.
That is Titans head coach Mike Vrabel addressing the media. Wanted to bring some of that to you. John Robinson is supposed to speak as well. We'll try and get some of that in as well coming up next. But I want to tell you about my favorite. You know, I talk about it all the time. Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. When I'm out and about with my friends, I order a shot of Screwball chilled. You can also have it on the rocks and just have it as a drink. A peanut butter old fashioned, a PB&J shot with a berry liqueur. It's made with real whiskey, peanuts, and peanut butter. Natural flavors, and it goes down oh so smooth. And I love it because it's an original, just like me, the suit. So you need to do like I do and go to your favorite watering hole and ask for it by name. Just say you want a Screwball peanut butter whiskey and enjoy. And make sure you enjoy responsibly. Copyright 2022 Screwball Spirits LLC, San Diego, California. Whiskey with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume.
Well, I don't want to rely on talent. I don't want to be a coach that relies on talent. I want to coach fundamentals, technique. I want to teach. I want to make sure that they play with great effort, and I know that we're talented. So my job is to not try to rely on talent. I want to try to coach. You know, there's a certain way that we want to play the game, and when we do, you know, we're a good football team. And when we turn it over and we don't protect the guy with the football, whether that's a quarterback, a running back, a receiver, you know, we're not very good. You know, we can't operate like that.
That's Titans head coach Mike Vrabel addressing the media, and I think he's still talking. Right now, as training camp gets underway, welcome back in Chase, Willie, and D-Mace here, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. So a few things that stood out to me, you know, that was a question that I believe Jared asked about, do you feel like the talent is better around Ryan Tannehill? Because Vrabel did say at the end of the season that we have to be better around Ryan Tannehill. It was what we were talking about before the press conference that, you know, in the grand scheme of things right now, I'm going to say no, it's not, but there's a lot of potential for it to be. Mm-hmm. He gave a coach speak answer because he wasn't, absolutely, you know, he's not going to sit there and say yes or no, but I thought it was, you know, a question you had to ask.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that we got a sense in the moment, mm-hmm, that Mike Vrabel was not fully on board of trading A.J. Brown. I think he understood in the weeks after why they did it.
Mm-hmm.
But the net result is you lose a really talented player. So if it's about talent and you lose A.J. Brown, that's, you know, he didn't want to get into that. So he chose to go down to the things he can control. He wants to coach the guys to a point where you get the most out of your talent. And I think what he was getting at is last year they shot themselves in the foot a lot. They turned the ball over a bunch. They had poor pass protection, and it showed. So I think, you know, you control what you can control. And he tried to pivot away from, let's compare last year's talent to this year's talent, because it's not in his interest. He's coaching this year's team. It's not his job to go tell you about last year's team.
Well, every year, you know, there's going to be turnover in the National Football League, and every year there's going to be turnover on your roster. So your roster is not going to look exactly the same, you know, in 22 than it did in 21, and he understands that. But he also understands that he played for a very long time. He's coached just as long, and he understands talent alone is not going to win you football games. And it damn sure ain't going to get you to the Super Bowl. You got to create turnovers. These guys got to be coached up, and they got to do the necessary things that you are teaching them. The guy can be uber talented, but if he's not doing the things you're asking him to do, or if I'm not teaching him the proper way to do things, then that talent means nothing. And Mike Vrabel, of all people, understands that. You know, the teams that he was on in New England, they probably were not the most talented teams in the National Football League, but they were probably some of the most well-coached teams in the National Football League. And that's what he's trying to get the Tennessee Titans to be, the most well-coached football team in the National Football. We don't have to be the talented. We just have to be the best coached in the National Football League.
One thing that Mike Vrabel did say, Buster Skrine has announced his retirement, and that's an interesting, you know, they're deep at corner. I feel good about them at corner, but he performed well last year, and I really liked the fact that they brought him back to have a veteran depth corner. So, you know, I do wonder, do they try and go replace that somewhere or just roll with what they have?
I think what will happen is, obviously, they probably got a sense that he possibly could be retiring, you know, within the last week or 2 weeks or so. And what they're going to do now is stay put right now in regards to adding, you know, defensive backs. They're going to evaluate the talent. They're going to let guys earn the right to be on this team and to be a part of that defense. And if those guys don't show up, then we can go out and bring guys in. Remember, as camp goes on, guys are going to be cut on all teams.
Right.
So now we can have our pick sort of the litter in regards to defensive backs. Let's just not, okay, Buster retires. Oh, we got to go out and get another defense. We don't have to.
And they have done, I think, a pretty good job over the last few years since John Robinson has been there of identifying those replacement-level guys that are out there that get cut or are free agents that can come in and do a decent job. You don't want to lean on those guys. But if you can find a guy and plug him into a role, they've gotten mileage out of that. Also, I think it's tied in to Caleb Farley. Mm-hmm. I was encouraged, and he's been doing well. Apparently, he had a couple interceptions for whatever that's worth, but he's out there. Uh-huh. Like they said, he's doing 90% of the stuff, as is Robert Woods. He is not full 100%. There's some drills they hold those guys out on, but they're doing a lot of stuff. To me, that's a good sign.
All right, I think we're about to go back to St. Thomas Sports Park because John Robinson is addressing the media. So we're trying to kind of play on the fly here. I think are we ready, Nick? Let's pause 10 seconds for station identification. Maybe. Maybe not.
You are...
Let's head back over to St. Thomas Sports Park and hear from Titans general manager John Robinson.
For a couple days, and has been running around well, and made a couple plays. So certainly excited with the trajectory that he's on, and you know, we'll take it day by day. And you know, bumps and bruises happen during training camp. Hopefully, we don't have too many.
Mike said that he expects Jeffrey to be out there tomorrow. Is there anything going on contract wise with the?
No, I mean, I talked to agents with a lot of our players. I've talked with his representation, and we've got an understanding of where we're at, and you know, he's excited to be back and ready to rock and roll.
Is where you are anywhere close to a new deal, or are you proceeding under the current terms?
Yeah, we don't really talk about contracts, and you know, I've said that before. I think that's a matter between the club and the agent and the player, and that's how we'll keep it here.
John, would you consider redoing a deal with another year and then an option year after that left on it still?
Yeah, philosophy-wise, again, I don't want to dive too much into contracts and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, everything's a case-by-case basis. But, you know, I would say that, you know, again, we're not going to talk about where we're at from a contract standpoint.
When a guy like Buster Skrine decides at the last minute here to retire – you sort of expect that each year, or is that a bit of a shock to the system and cause you to regroup somewhere?
No, you know, you never really know, David. I was so proud he was a part of our team last year after every game. And we signed him midseason. He came in and contributed for us. You know, as a guy that I think he's got 11 years in the league, and the smile on his face, and he gave me the biggest hug after every win. It was like, thank you so much for the opportunity. But you never know where guys are at, you know, health-wise and where they're at, you know, with the game. And wish him nothing but the best. He was a great teammate. He worked hard. You know, was kind of an old soul that, you know, showed up every single day and was productive for us. So I wish him nothing but the best moving forward. As far as for the spot, you know, Ryan and I have met with personnel staff this morning, kind of talking through some things, and I'm sure we'll have some guys, you know, here in the next, you know, couple of days that'll you know, be on the workout circuit with us.
Do you say we need to get another cornerback, or do you look and say we've got an opportunity to get this guy who's a good player at this position?
I think it's probably more the first, you know, just from a standpoint of numbers. You know, Mike and I have a number that we like to have at each position every time we go into training camp. So I think it's probably more DB than the latter.
Are there lessons, John, that you learned from the one and done over the last 2 years organizationally that can be applied now going forward that can help you avoid that?
Yeah, I think every situation is unique. You know, I think that you evaluate the player, you get as much information as you can, and you know, sometimes they work out well, and sometimes they, you know, they don't. And we claimed Zach Cunningham at the end of the season last year, who wasn't playing a whole lot for Houston, but had really productive games and played a lot. You know, obviously we played against him, and he came in and was great for us, and we're excited that Zach's back. So I think every situation is unique and every situation is different, but you know, you certainly look at the things that when it does work out, okay, well, why did that work out? You try to ask yourself, and you know, why did it not work out? And you obviously try to not go back down the road where it didn't work out, and focus more on the times that it did.
Now, can you speak broadly to that theme of the ending of the last 2 years, and maybe what the organization learns, what you learn?
Well, I mean, I think the process for us is player acquisition is such a broad scope, right? Whether that comes from the college or the pros, the street, from other teams, from waivers, trades. And I think what we went through last year was a testament not only to the process that we put in place from the personnel side, but it's a collaboration, because we may identify a player that fits characteristics or traits that we believe fit our program, but it's a collaborative effort from the coaches to get that player ready that week, from the trainers to add a new person to find out what that's about, the weight staff, equipment. It's such a big process to get all those guys in. And I think for us, it's just trying to find each and every one of those guys that fit both on the field and in the locker room as best they can.
John, you guys have been saying about wanting to be great around Ryan. Now, Mike says he doesn't want to be a coach that relies on talent, but as somebody whose job is to get the talent and make a great roster, where would you say you feel like your roster is comparatively to last year around Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what all of the video game rankings have us, you know, that have been posted over the last 2 weeks. I don't know where we stack up on that ranking, but I like the camaraderie of the group. I like the trajectory of the group. You know, I thought we made some strides, certainly in the spring in the OTAs, and it looks like we were off to a pretty good start here the last couple of days with these young players. So,
positions maybe that are still kind of open, maybe some question marks. Mike talked about, you know, the two spots on the O-line. I guess how long ideally do you take a look at those guys? You know, you hope that the starters are here, but you know, how long do you give that before saying they either are or we need to still look around?
Well, I mean, it's got to be a couple of weeks. You know, we got to get pads on, and I mean, these linemen haven't had pads on since, you know, a year, whenever the college guys finished. So you got to see those guys, you know, actually put football pads on and run football plays. So you got to be a little conscious of that. The new players with the terminology, you know, offensively, defensively, we got a lot of players back on defense, so that carryover terminology-wise and staff consistency certainly helps. But at some point, they're going to have to be able to do their job or not be able to do their job. And if they can't, then we've got somebody on our team, on our current roster, that can do the job. And if not, then Ryan and I got to go to work and try to find somebody out there that can.
In regards to Traylon Burks, his head coach, Sam Pittman, has said that he wasn't aware of the asthma issue, but that there were conditioning issues initially that he worked out. Is that something that you guys got to talk to him about? Is the asthma a new thing that you didn't know was on the surface before?
Yeah, I mean, I think Traylon was pretty transparent with us when we brought him in here and talked to him. And, you know, he admitted that he had some stuff in college that he felt like he needed to be better at. And, you know, I would say that he's attacked the time that he's been here and gotten himself ready to go out and perform. And it certainly showed the work that he's put in over the last, you know, 2 days that he's been here early, that he's ready to roll.
What is the dialogue like, whether it's between you and Ryan, you and Mike, all of you together during camp? Is it a couple of times a day looking at it, and do you talk about certain players, certain positions? How does that kind of transpire?
I'll let Ryan go first.
It's pretty much all day. Like, we, you know, especially for John and I, now a lot of times with coaches' responsibilities, it's hard to talk to every little department. So, you know, you have this little chain of communication, I should say, where John and coach can get together, and then he can get with me and my staff, and we can work through the things that we need to get at. But in terms of John on the personnel side, I mean, it's multiple times throughout the day. I mean, the offices are 10 feet apart. There's always going to be something that comes up, whether it's little, big, whatever, or just thinking forward, whether it's planning scouts, planning preseason scouting, you know, changes in processes. So that's a constant communication, Jim.
And how rewarding was, I guess, last year when you guys kind of build that ready list,
mm-hmm.
play with 91 guys, and to see some of those guys have the success that they had?
Sure. Obviously, that wouldn't be the ideal situation, right? But as I stated earlier, yeah, you might say, how did you find this guy, or what did you see in this player that made you think he'd be successful in your program? That's just one part of it. But the collaboration from the coaches being willing to get that guy ready on short notice, the trainers, like I said, having how do I get this guy, what's his health background, what works best for him, and then really the player. The player has a huge responsibility upon himself to be ready to help the football team. So we are a part of it in terms of identifying and hoping to bring in the right guys that fit the fabric of the players we want to bring in. But then once they're here, it's so much about the rest of the organization, the other parts, and the player himself taking that opportunity and running with it.
When you see these rookies out here, and you've gone through, you guys and your staff have gone through the evaluation process of seeing what they can do and can potentially be.
Mm-hmm.
As a general rule, how soon do you know when a guy is ready to make that move versus a guy like, say, Dylan Radins last year that was going to need some time to develop and work through?
Yeah, that's a great question, Terry. I think it's really different for every player. You know, Dylan was a player who came from a smaller school, who was affected by the COVID year, really only played one game, and then he played in the Senior Bowl. So he hadn't played – I mean, he had played football, but, you know, the recent history certainly wasn't extensive. And he worked at it last year and I thought he made some really good strides in this offseason. So I think it's different for different players, you know, just kind of how quickly they assimilate themselves to our program and how quickly they can go out and perform.
Can you see it? Do you know when the light goes on for those guys? Can you tell it from an evaluation process?
Yeah, sometimes, and it's different because sometimes it's instant, and then other times we'll be sitting in there watching tape and we're talking and it's like, all right, he's coming on, you know, or vice versa. It's, you know, it's like, he's not quite there yet, you know. It's different.
What kind of mentality do you need to see from Dylan? It doesn't always seem like I'm going out there to win this job no matter what kind of guy.
When he puts his hand in the grass, do everything he can to try to block his guy. Like, that's his most important job. There's a lot that goes into that. But Dylan is a guy that's in here early. He's one of the first guys in the building every day. I know he's extremely important to him. You know, maybe his personality isn't that one to be outgoing and, you know, I'm going to go chew through rebarb. But it's extremely important to it, and you can see that in the time that he puts in this building.
John, how have you seen Malik acclimate to this program since he arrived in the spring, and knowing that Ryan is your guy this season, what kind of strides, what would you like to see him kind of make up behind the scenes and as we get into preseason games?
Yeah, I mean, he's coming in, he's learning a totally new offense, he's throwing to new players from a timing and decision-making standpoint, calling the play in the huddle, taking command of the huddle when he's in there, whoever's in the huddle with him, showing that leadership, which he's shown. You know, I thought that he put the ball where it was supposed to be most of the times during the spring. There were some timing things that, you know, he's got to continue to try to improve on. But another guy that's really worked hard in the offseason, certainly when they were here. And, you know, he's had a good couple of days here.
John, from a long-term standpoint, how do you balance Derrick Henry's uniqueness to the reality of – what happens to running backs with high workloads as they approach the age of 30?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a Derek's been awesome for us. You know, he's a volume guy. You know, he wants the ball. That's his mindset. He likes it when we give it to him. And you know, that's a balance that you have to, you know, from a coaching standpoint with trainers, with the strength coaches, just figure out what's best for the football team, and that goes with any position. You know, how much is that guy going to be out there if and or when you have a chance to get him out of the game? Do you do that? You know, because the most important thing is availability of the player, a lot of times more so than the ability of the player.
Right. That's Titans general manager John Robinson and director of player personnel Ryan Cowden addressing the media. Wanted to bring some of that to you. A lot of stuff to discuss from the head coach and from the GM. We will do that coming up next. Tim Hasselbeck coming up at the bottom of the hour here on Chase, Willie, and D-Mace. 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.